Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is The Ruck from The Times and The Sunday Times. Thanks once again for joining us. It's been a spectacular weekend in which Australia were downed at the hands of Scotland and in which the black ferns became the black weeds against the red roses. I'm Stephen Jones and I'm delighted to welcome Owen Slott back onto the podcast. Slotty, as everybody knows now because he's told them, is the chief sports writer. Is that your official title, Slotty?
That's it, yeah.
Chief sports writer of The Times, but it's typical of his modesty that he's come back to dear old rugby for a bit of a chat with his old friends, which he has not forgotten, to be frank, before he went up the golden elevator to join Mr. Murdoch on his right hand. We also have here, according to my script, the legendary broadcaster John Inverdale. I'll be having a word with the scriptwriter soon, but Invers, you're very welcome, old chap. I know that you've been involved heavily in discussions for the future of rugby. Does rugby have a future?
I think it does have a future, but I think what that future is very interesting. I'm going to be very interested to hear what the chief sports writer of The Times has to say about it.
I am. Well, hang on every word.
I can't wait to get onto it. I thought we were talking about international rugby today, but actually the whole existential problem of rugby is far greater. No, how long have we got for this podcast?
That's really down the order now. Let's just go on to Eddie Jones then, just to drag ourselves back to rugby, if Eddie Jones is rugby, and I'm never quite sure. This morning in The Times, Eddie has not content with his grasp of everything rugby and everything English, he's now got a grasp of tennis, world-class tennis. He warns Marcus Smith, who he brought on fairly late in the game on Saturday, Owen, not to be like Emma Raducanu, by which he means, I think he's accusing Raducanu of taking her eyes off the new balls and the old balls by indulging in the sort of fantasy of wealth and riches and deals and agents, etc. Is there a comparison, and is that fair, or is Eddie talking out of his backside as usual?
I think it's a fascinating comparison. So on one level, it's interesting because poor old Emma Raducanu, she's only been US Open champion like 7 weeks or something. And it's an example of what it's like suddenly being a superstar is she now has the England rugby coach giving an opinion on how she's conducting her affairs. He's saying, let's make sure that Marcus Smith doesn't do this. But what he's actually saying is Marcus Smith is entering right into Emma Raducanu territory, where everyone is going to have an opinion about him, whatever happens. Now, whether it's right or wrong about what he says about Raducanu, has she become a commercial magnet and no longer a tennis player? Well, that's another conversation altogether. I actually think that there is something in there. There is something in there. What he says, that how he knows what she's up to, I don't know at all.
John, he's way out of his depth here, Eddie.
I think it's an interesting point. When Marcus Smith came on Saturday, there was a palpable intake of breath by 82,000 people at Twickenham. And the danger with being involved in this world, our world, for an eternity, is you can become a bit jaundiced and a bit cynical about things. And the next big thing, you think, really, it's not as good as the old big thing. I remember I saw Glenn Hoddle play his first ever game for Spurs. I remember he came on and he was so brilliant. Everybody was just going, oh, my God, that is just beyond. and Amir Khan, one of his first fights, people saying, have you seen anybody with this vitality and this pizzazz? And on Saturday, when Marcus Smith came on, no matter how well people had been playing up until that point, he just gave something to that occasion, to that ground, that hadn't been there before. And in the bar afterwards, it was all anybody was talking about. Now, whether that's right or wrong is neither here nor there. It's because we live in this slightly superficial world of image, of everything else that goes with it. What does he look like? He looks pretty cool. He looks like he's in a boy band. He actually, to me, I think with the hair, I think he does look like a bit like a sort of throwback to Spandau Ballet 40 years ago. But he comes on, you look at him.
We're all showing our age now.
Yeah, but you come on, an image, strut, swagger. He's just got something. And just lifted everybody. And half an hour after the game had ended, people were still talking about how great a player in years to come would we... And he's only been on for 28 minutes. So I think there is a danger here of all of us getting carried away. But fundamentally, what a player. And what a player he could be.
Carried away. Just a minute. Raducanu may be new. She has won a Grand Slam tournament. Yeah. She's the first Brit to win one since before Spandau Ballet were even formed. So Marcus Smith, in terms of international rugby, has done the better part of nothing.
Yeah, that's
that is just such a jumping on the bandwagon thing, Invers, and I'm surprised at you as a seasoned journalist,
okay,
not a general sports writer like Slotty.
Jonesy, put it another way.
Put
it another way. When have you last been this excited about a potential debut for an England rugby player? Now, I know he played twice in the summer. I know he got 25 minutes or something against Tonga, but he hasn't played against a top international team yet. I personally can't remember when I was last so thrilled to see how a new young talent can go.
I was as thrilled, the last time I was as thrilled as I was about Marcus Smith was last Thursday.
Jonesy, what?
He's not played.
Did you really get out of
rugby.
Bed on? Did you get out of bed on the wrong side today? Because that's a miserable curmudgeon.
John, we don't know who he saw last Thursday.
Well, no, that's a good point.
Jonesy,
actually.
What game you out on Thursday?
When did the Premiership last replicate international rugby? The Premiership is exciting and attacking. The international rugby isn't. And actually, Tonga. Let's just remember one thing about Tonga. They weren't Tonga. Tonga are not very good. Okay, this wasn't even the not very good Tonga. These were the dregs that they picked up in France because of COVID.
Yeah, but Jonesy,
now, for
Jonesy,
goodness sake, if you're going to be diving off the high board because of Marcus Smith, we'll be having our bathing trunks on for about 10 years.
Jonesy, of course, you're right that he hasn't done anything yet in international rugby. That's because he hasn't played it yet. What we're saying is how excited we are about what he can do.
And also, the key thing here, as three curmudgeonly journalists, I'm just looking at it from the other side. I'm looking at it from the point, if I'm working for X, whatever marketing brand that is, whatever organisation that is outside sport, and I'm thinking, who are we going to pick up on here? Who is the somebody who could be advertising this, who could be promoting that, who could be the face of whatever it might be? I tell you what, Marcus Smith ticks about every single box.
Well, that just shows how shallow that world is. Invers, when you broke away to score for the rugby writers against Sparta Prague...
Yes. The endorsements came flooding in.
No, they didn't, actually. You had nothing. You didn't have a single offer. So, but on the other hand, at least you kept your balance after that magnificent try. But I'm sorry, guys, you've both gone off the high board. You really have. And when he's done the equivalent of Raducanu, then Eddie can compare. But at the moment, there's no comparison, in my opinion. Slotty, you can have the last word, and then Invers can have the last word after that.
Jesus, yeah, Invers, we never allow the last word normally when Jonesy's in charge of this thing.
I don't know whether he's actually. I'm looking because the good thing is we're actually in a studio together as opposed to being sort of down lines and things. So I'm just watching Jonesy's face while he's saying this.
And we're waiting for that smile.
We've known each other an awful long time, and I just can't decide if this is deliberately just poking the bear just to sort of provoke debate.
I can tell you for
or
nothing.
If you, do you actually believe what you're saying here?
I totally, hand on heart, I'm not poking the bear. Where is the bear, anyway? I'm not poking the bear. I totally believe that hype is something that you dole on someone and you flood him with it until he's done something.
Well, all I would say is I think, you know, let's assume, I mean, it is a very interesting debating point about who will start at 10 for England next Saturday against Australia. You know, but surely, you know, what do we know? Surely Marcus Smith will start. And then maybe we see on a different level the extent to which he could become a superstar, inverted commas, okay, of the game. But rugby, the one thing we need to always be realistic about in rugby is that there are actually very, very few. This game, this entire sport has produced very, very few sporting stars who have not just transcended the game, but have actually moved into being international stars.
Completely,
you know, Lomu,
right,
might be in there. Even Johnny Wilkinson might have a question mark against it. There's so few people. You know, Dan Carter, okay, maybe a god in New Zealand, but you know, he's not. He can walk down the street in Pennsylvania and nobody know who he was.
Come on, Amos, what about Stuart Abbott, the former WASC centre?
Yeah,
you're not giving him a fair turn there.
No, probably not.
But anyway,
I just think that if Marcus Smith is half as good as people think he might be, he could be a real, genuine superstar.
In fact, if he's half as good as you appear to think he is, he could be Prime Minister. They've got Australia, then they've got world champion South Africa, okay? Mm. To play for your life at fly half against South Africa, would you have George Ford, Owen Farrell, or Marcus Smith? Because I would have those three in that order.
It's an autumn international. It's not a World Cup, and that's the big difference. And that's one of the fundamental problems with all autumn internationals.
South Africa are replaying the World Cup final.
No. That's you hyping up the match. That's you getting caught up in it. It is you hyping up the match.
No, it's not.
It is. If this match, if England against South Africa was the deciding match in determining who won the annual trophy for all the international matches,
if it was a World Cup final,
then it's a different conversation. But because we're at the stage where it matters, and it's a game that, you know, will get forgotten because these autumn internationals do after a while. Therefore, you have to start Marcus Smith, because then
if England don't win, Eddie is right back under pressure. He has to win. Otherwise, he's beaten a useless Tongan and a semi-useless Australia. England have to win that match.
I disagree, Jonesy.
About the autumn internationals, at Cardiff, you haven't answered the question.
When
yet.
Did the word "last word" cease to mean last? You know, what is that word? which syllable of the word "last" am I misunderstanding?
Cardiff on Saturday. Can I have the first word, please?
Watching up close, you have no idea of the intensity of that Springbok team and the Welsh team, and how much they wanted to win. They were absolutely flat out. Slotty, the last word to you goes. Who do you want to play for your life against South Africa at fly half?
Hey, okay, so you're saying it's a World Cup final tomorrow?
No, I'm saying England-South Africa is a massive game. It's a massive game.
Wait, I'm picking Marcus Smith whatever happens, because I don't think you can't not pick him anymore. If it's a World Cup final tomorrow, I'd probably pick George Ford.
Okay.
Because I think George Ford is a proven international proven international 10, and obviously Marcus isn't, because he hasn't played international 10 yet.
Right, next.
I tell you what, I've really missed this.
Right, next we'll chat with the former Scotland captain, John Barclay, about Scotland's match with Australia yesterday.
Yeah.
And we'll see if Invers and Slotty can get Marcus Smith into that.
The TalkSport Network is the home of the Autumn Nations series this November. The action continues this weekend with four matches on TalkSport, including a triple bill on Saturday of Scotland versus South Africa, Ireland against New Zealand, and England hosting Australia. Wales against Fiji is on Sunday, so download the TalkSport app to stay up with all the action.
Hello, now we've got John Barclay with us. John, we all much enjoyed your column on Richard Cockerell last week, and Eddie Jones, and we're waiting for the first punch-up. So there could be one fairly soon, do you reckon?
Possibly. Hopefully not. Hopefully we can realise it's just opinions and everyone has opinions. But yeah, it could be an interesting discussion if we bump into each other in the street.
Excellent. John, first of all, it seemed to be a great occasion, leaving aside the technical qualities of the match, etc. Yesterday, it seemed a really great occasion. The crowd appeared to be well into it, and really, maybe one of the best days for some seasons.
Yeah, I think you probably hit the nail on the head there. It wasn't the best game. Technically, tactically, it wasn't superb. There was a lot of errors in it, but just to be back at Murrayfield with, you know, a full stadium, the week before against Tonga, you know, half full. But yeah, you know, we're pretty biased as Scots. We think it's pretty nice playing at Murrayfield, and to have it, you know, fully sold out, on a big occasion like that. It was a real privilege to be back, because the last 18 months was hard work as a commentator, and I can't imagine as a player how I would have found that. Probably not that enjoyable.
Sure, there was a great sense of relief, but isn't it remarkable that some of these guys are still quite new to the team? I mean, the team has been ever changing in the last few seasons, but these guys may have put down a marker to sort of all continue in the team. Would you agree?
I think that was a pretty settled team, and that's as close to Scotland's first choice team as you're going to get. I think probably in the second row, they you could argue that Scott Cummings and Johnny Gray might be the first choice players there. I think as a back line, that is as good a back line as Scotland can put out, and with Impact coming off the bench. So I think there's some guys in there that are inexperienced. But if you look at the team, even the guys who are relatively inexperienced, they've still played, 14 of the last 15 test matches or whatever it might be. So I think that for me is pretty much full strength. I think certainly the guys the week before, very inexperienced team against Tonga, and equipped themselves well. And I think I said in my column, how much did we learn about that game other than the fact that there's a huge gap between Tonga and some of the tier two nations and top tier one nations, which is a totally different topic and one we could spend almost days talking about and how to rectify that. But I think for the guys that played in that game, they played superbly well. You can only play what's in front of you, and to actually go out there, get your first cap out the way, that sounds dismissive, but there's something about getting the nerves and getting the anxieties, and that big hurdle of getting your first cap can be such an emotional one. So to actually have that sort of one game under the belt and to be putting a bit of pressure on the guys who are sort of sat in pole positions in those positions.
Sure. John, just a sort of general question on the background. Scotland's have not been great in terms of results for a long time. Do you think that what rugby has lost in terms of in terms of interest in the country, in terms of people dying to go to Murrayfield or maybe going to get the pro to watch the pro teams, do you think that can all be recovered now that the team is shaping up better?
And actually, John, before you answer that, could I just chip in on that? Because I actually spoke at a dinner last week at the Caledonian Club in London, and I'm sure you've probably been there, John, on a couple of occasions. And there were a lot of Scottish sort of golfing people there, but Scottish rugby people is there, who were talking about playing numbers in Scotland, some schools that were rugby schools now not playing in Scotland as well. And it seems to me that if that is an issue, an international team that's winning is absolutely paramount to keeping the sport vibrant and keeping it in the forefront of people's minds.
I think Scotland needs to have a successful and vibrant and a quality rugby team to, I guess, inspire the next generation of players. If we have, in terms of playing numbers, we shouldn't really compete on any stage with the top tier nations. We have small playing numbers, but I think, a Scottish team that's playing a good brand of rugby is one thing, and relative success last year, probably closer to where they need to be than they have been in the last couple of years. But also the impact of eight guys going on a British and Irish Lions tour, that aspirational piece for guys who are youngsters watching the game thinking, for years and years and years of Lions tours, you would see, one Scot or two Scots or maybe even three if you were lucky. But to have eight guys go and for six of them to get capped in test matches, I think it's in pretty good health. I think in terms of playing numbers, I'd say since 2018, crowd numbers, Murrayfield's been a pretty spectacular place to come and watch rugby. I think the brand of rugby under Vern Cotter in his latter stages, and certainly the brand of rugby that Gregor's trying to play with the team, is a brand of rugby that people want to get behind. But people want to get behind winning teams, ultimately. The players want to be associated with winning teams. But also, I think they understand that at that level, the margins are so small. You could look back last year and everyone's talking about it was a successful year for Scotland, but they still finished fourth on the table in the Six Nations. So they won't be happy with that. But they also understand they could have beaten Wales. I hate when people say, oh, we should have beaten someone, because I definitely believe that you get what you deserve in this game. So they could have beaten them. They could have beaten Ireland, but the margins are so tight, and the guys in the squad they have now are in a better position to understand that and actually do something about it.
On the subject of forwards, you've never had a shortage of hookers. You all seem to have two or three hookers. And yesterday, it looked like young Ewan Ashman played well. But, I mean, have you ever seen at Murrayfield or indeed anywhere a finish like he executed for the try?
I don't know if I was more impressed or just more depressed. I never did anything like that in my career. No, he played really well. I thought he had great. I mean, imagine coming on your first cap at Murrayfield, 68,000 people against Australia, who are on a bit of a run of form, and throw into the mix. They're both their second rows are about 8 foot tall, and he's got to try and throw line out. So I thought he equipped himself well, really well, actually. And I think that kind of speaks more to the culture that they've got within the squad. The guys who are tending to come in as new players are actually settling in very fast into the squad.
Mm. Just finally then, John, I mean, obviously the euphoria will be easing away during the week as they start preparing for South Africa. Do you think that they can beat South Africa? They won't be favourites, but do you think that they could surge on now mentally and physically and knock off the world champions?
100%. I think knowing that sort of bias, doing this, me leaning too much into my Scottish roots, but you know, they beat Australia, knocked over South Africa twice in 2 weeks. So what? Who's to say Scotland can't do the same? It's a totally different game. The way they play the game, they'll almost have to turn their game plan on its head against South Africa, and it'll be a different challenge. It'll be a different challenge physically, and they would learn a lot. But I think for me, the fact that we're almost left Murrayfield yesterday almost with relief rather than elation at beating a team as good as Australia is at the moment. So it says a lot about the team. It says a lot about where they want to get to, and the fact that they're not just content with knocking over a Southern Hemisphere big boy. So yeah, look, I think totally that the game's there for them this weekend, but this obviously will be the biggest challenge they'll have faced arguably in a number of years.
John, hi, it's Owen Slotts here. I'm really, really intrigued by the how Scotland play this coming weekend against South Africa, because you have Gregor Townsend, who was obviously a key man in Warren Gatland's coaching staff during the Lions tour, and we got a brand of rugby from the Lions that you would never really have aligned with Gregor Townsend. Do you think that we will see Gregor Townsend type rugby that the Lions maybe could and should have played, or do you think he'll revert to the sort of rugby that the Lions thought they needed to play when they were down there?
I don't think he'll play the sort of rugby the Lions play, because it wasn't very successful. I think everyone watched that series was pretty disappointed as a spectator. It wasn't a great spectacle to watch, so it was certainly a conflict, or in contrast, sorry, with the way of the brand of rugby that I think Gregor wants to play, and having been coached by him and worked with him. So, yeah, look, I think there's different ways to play the game. Scotland won't beat South Africa physically. You know, I don't care what anyone says. Almost no team in world rugby will beat them physically, given the sort of genetics and the player pool they have. But that being said, I also don't think Scotland can play that wide game which they tried to play against Australia. They kept playing the ball out the back with a clear tactic in the first half to play the ball out the back, and they kept doing it. And I thought the Australian centres were superb, actually, in how they dealt with that. So I think Scotland are going to have to be pretty cute around about how they target South Africa and where they target South Africa. They're going to have to meet them confrontationally, but equally understand that they're going to have to move them around in those tight channels. I think one of the most disappointing things in the Lions tour was how little rugby was probably played in terms of ball and play. Was like, I think it was 23 minutes maybe in one of the test matches, which is kind of half what you'd expect. So I'd imagine a lot of this week will be about how they keep the ball alive, how they move the bigger men around, how they make them fatigue, and how they actually can be sort of cute in and around those tight exchanges. And they'll have some ideas of how they'll do that for sure.
Okay, well, that's a great prospect, made even greater by Scotland's win over Australia on Saturday. It's Scotland versus the world champions. John Barclay, thank you very much.
No worries. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Cheers, John.
Thanks a lot, John. Cheers, John. Great. Thank you.
See you later.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
Yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
It was great to talk to John Barclay there. What a tremendous player he was. And now a Times journalist. Wales, South Africa. I think I've already said earlier on in the podcast what an unbelievably intense match it was. And two things I thought from the Welsh point of view were encouraging. A, the crowd, after an absence of some time, were really behind it. They didn't come across like a bunch of drunken partygoers. In fact, there was one drunken party goer who ran on the field, but it was a fantastic atmosphere, and the press box at Cardiff is very close to the action, and the intensity of it was absolutely brutal. And there was a time just towards the end, Slotty, where South Africa had four or five attempts to drive and hadn't succeeded, so there was just a chance against the odds of Wales hanging on. What were your overall impressions?
I loved the occasion. I sat there wondering, thinking, I know where this is going from almost beginning to end. I thought Wales were amazing that they managed to push the contest right to the last 10. But I just always thought that South Africa had the superior quality. Though, as you say, there was that period of it around the sort of 72nd, 73rd minute when South Africa were bashing away and you thought this is where they were going to put the whole thing to bed. Bless him, it was the incredible Ellis Jenkins who got the turnover. Suddenly Wales were down the other end again, and it did look like we might get one of those dream outcomes at the end of a game where the underdog sort of pulls off something amazing. They can do it, but I think I know you hate the idea that these games could be building blocks or learning things or something to the future, but yeah, I think Wales will feel, you could tell afterwards they felt pretty damn pleased with what they'd done.
A couple of English friends of mine actually went down to that game on Saturday, and I was actually with them yesterday, and they had never been to the Principality Stadium before, and they just, they said it was a great game, but to go back to the point that Jonesy was just saying there, they just couldn't get over the intensity in the ground, just the emotion, the passion, all those other cliches that we always trot out. But actually, when Cardiff is buzzing, there is nowhere like it. There really isn't. And I mean, I watched the last sort of 20 minutes or so on the telly, having been at Twickenham, and I watched it, and it came through the screen. How the intensity of the game, it was just fantastic, and there is still something intangible about how wonderful a really great rugby occasion in Cardiff can be.
I went away thinking, asking myself this question: what would it have looked like without any fans in there? Because I'm so jaundiced by the Lions experience and the month that we spent down there. And I don't think the rugby was any better. I don't think Wales played hardly any rugby at all. But as we were saying, it felt like one of the great days to be in a stadium.
Yeah, that's a fair point. You guys getting jaundiced. I wasn't jaundiced at all by that tour. I loved every minute of it, Slotty.
Yeah, well.
I did. I loved every minute of it.
I loved it when we got that rugby, wine delivery matches, out the blue. Matches.
Yeah, no, that was lovely. That was from Peter Steftetoy's father, you know.
Yeah, well, we got friends in high places,
anyway,
didn't we?
Invers, South Africa, no variation on their normal theme, but I don't know whether you, as a halfback yourself, felt that Faf de Klerk was sadly missed because the two guys who tried to make up for his absence didn't.
I don't understand why South Africa feel the need to play in the sort of the intransigent way they do, when actually when you look at some of the players that South Africa have got at their disposal, they could almost play, if they wanted, if there was a mindset there, they could almost play like the Wallabies do, you know. But I mean, when did you last see, you know, well, if Marcus Smith was South African, I think he might ignite that.
I wish
he was. Think how he could ignite that back division.
You'd have as much chance as Emma Raducanu. Come on, you know that.
I mean, it's a winning formula, isn't it? But it doesn't excite. It's not allowed to excite. And well, the problem is, this is when you come back to the same old thing. You know, and every time on the odd occasions that you invite me onto this thing, we end up having the same conversation. But this is about, do you preach to the converted, or are you trying to actually get more people interested in the sport? If all that matters to you is winning, and the rugby fraternity watch, and we all have an opinion about how South Africa play, and South Africa play like that, ergo they win, then you say fine, you don't mind whether other people outside the game aren't that bothered. If you actually have as your totem bearers, if you put the All Blacks to one side, but as the current world champions, if you have as the current standard bearers for your sport, the people who set the standard to get everybody interested in it, a team that plays in such a pragmatic, let's be conservative about it, in such a pragmatic way the whole time,
you are not
going to get people to go, wow, isn't this a great sport, fantastic, have you seen the way they play, because it doesn't excite you and you know sets you your
the thing
your
is
light.
But what so, you're
but
saying is
but South Africa don't care about that because it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. What you're saying is how we're looking at it.
Yeah.
But when you've been in Cape Town for a month, like Jonesy and I have were in July, you understand that what you're saying it doesn't register.
No, no, no.
They're not thinking like that at all. The thing that matters most to them is victory, yeah. and then the style of your rugby is almost irrelevant.
But that's why going back to, you know, Marcus Smith again, this is when you actually. The irrelevance, or what Jonesy sees as the irrelevance, as in the ephemeral, the marketing, the PR, the publicity, the image, all that sort of stuff of your product. You know, you may think it's irrelevant, Jonesy, but that's what brings the cash in. That's what actually gets the TV contracts. That's what gets people talking about your sport. They don't, you know, a couple of those All Black Australia games in the summer. I mean, if you just played those to people who had never seen a game of rugby in their lives, they would have gone, whoa, this is the most incredible sport. When do I start? When can my kids play? This is just brilliant.
But you've already said that people were just going bonkers at Cardiff for that game, which they were. Rugby can be done in a couple of different ways. The idea that you've got to have five tries attacking rugby is nonsense.
No, I agree with you about that, but the people who had an amazing day in Cardiff were rugby people anyway.
No, they weren't.
Yes, they were.
They weren't. It's been proven, John, that the people there are eventers. The old thing where they all used to sing Cum Ronda and all that, it's gone. They're eventers. You've got a capacity of 75,000, you don't have to fill it with rugby people.
Jonesy, let me ask you something that John was just saying. Liz, I think he was saying this, John, which I think is really interesting. If you look at the argumentative
when he was on the BBC?
wasn't allowed to be.
That's why it was his life ambition to join the Rucks.
Sorry, sorry. Yeah.
If you look at the raw talent on that South Africa team, so I would say that Colby, obviously injured, not playing, but Colby Mapimpi, I would say, would be the most dangerous or exciting pairs of wingers in the world. I would say that Lukanyo Am and Dale Lende are probably the best centre partnership in the world, albeit that they are both of a similar style. Cobus Reinach, I mean, we've seen him in the Premiership. He doesn't lack for much. Do you think that if you said to Gregor Townsend, sorry mate, you've lost your job with Scotland, but you're now the Springbok coach, do you think that they could produce something pretty amazing? Because I think that's what you were saying.
It is. But there's not the will. There's not the will.
Yeah.
Or the necessity. Well, going back to your point.
Well, they found a way, haven't they?
Yeah.
Incidentally, I think Lukanyo Am is an absolutely brilliant rugby player as well. And I do think that he doesn't get a chance to show it. I think he's absolutely brilliant.
Oh, so now you're agreeing with us now?
So, no.
No, but he does show it. He did his little chip and collect on Saturday. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And he initiated a try, I think it was in the box, All Blacks game, with the incredible sort of flick behind his back. That was him, wasn't it?
Just,
he can do amazing things.
South Africa, John, can South Africa or rather, I was going to say, can South Africa lose to Scotland? Can Scotland big themselves up one more time and beat South Africa?
I don't know. I'll be interested to see what the odds are on that. I mean, South Africa will obviously be favourites. I think it's not impossible. I think it could be a one-score game, but the thing that Slotty was saying about the almost inevitability in Cardiff, just the brute force of the Springboks. You know, the Welsh defence was incredible, but how many times can you get up and tackle and get up and tackle and get up and tackle against that South African side? And if they just pick and go and pick and go and pick and go endlessly, at some point they're going to score, and maybe that will be the deciding factor again.
Also, if you think that South Africa only had, I think it was 3 attacking scrums in the Wales game. Mm. I mean, Wales got off so lightly by only having 3 go against them, because they were just marching forwards every single time. And I'd be absolutely astonished if the Scottish scrum goes any better.
True. Let's just go on to something we've been talking about off air, as we say in podcasting. Japan, the great story of the Japanese World Cup, beating Scotland, playing magnificent rugby, absolutely thrashed by Ireland. And this is when Japan are actually on the verge of being admitted to the rugby championship. Should we now be really worried about this, John? Or
I thought that was the single most dispiriting result of the weekend. Yeah. I mean, I found the Tonga result dispiriting for all the euphoria of Marcus Smith. Just get him in there quickly. Good player, actually. I think. as watching it on a big screen, sort of out the corner of an eye, and every time you looked over, Ireland had scored again. You thought, what is going on here? And I don't know, because I didn't really watch the game in its entirety, in the sort of holistic kind of way, whether it's just that Ireland were very, very good, although a couple of Irish mates say they were, or whether Japan are just poor and on a sort of a bit of a dip at the moment. I mean, I think what it does do is it makes Ireland against the All Blacks arguably the match of the weekend coming up. I mean, I think that's really, really interesting, because, you know, it's clearly the way Johnny Sexton's, you know, flying at the moment and really up for it. And I think it's not beyond the bounds of possibilities for Ireland to beat the All Blacks this weekend. And that's what this time next week on the Ruck, that's what you'd be talking about. That would be the big talking point.
I think Imus is right there. Then there was, he had to be right sometime in this podcast.
But if you were only going to one game this coming weekend, if, you know, someone said, here's a ticket for the game, that's the game you go to.
Well, even if Marcus Smith is starting for England, you can't have it both ways.
There was one game, incidentally, chaps, that we're going to hear from Jess Hayden about, and that was when New Zealand were not only beaten as the Black Ferns, but absolutely crushed. And I think on Sunday, the whole world of the women's rugby, international rugby, changed completely, possibly forever. And also the World Cup change. I wouldn't have thought the World Cup organisers in New Zealand were that happy that their team, the Black Ferns, conceded 50-odd points. But what a magnificent performance by England. And also, John, did you see the game?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
You would have loved it, because it was backs taking on backs in attack.
Yes. There were a couple of outside breaks.
The England midfield instead of popping the ball off to huge forwards or kicking it, they ran. The two wings were in the game all the time. Abby Dow got the try she deserved towards
is
the
that
end.
Maidenhead Abby Dow.
It's absolutely magnificent. Absolutely magnificent. And they beat him up front and they beat him up behind. What more can you want?
And I'm just going to keep this theme running through, much though you annoy it or don't like it. Is actually, from a marketing point of view, it was a great advert for the game because of the ball going wide, because of the fact that it was backs running at backs and things like that. You know, again, if you're trying to sell women's rugby to people who are not engaged in it at the moment, there were elements of that match yesterday where you'd have gone, wow, that's just fantastic. And that's important. That's every bit as important as every other aspect of the game.
I would wonder if you sort of are looking at that England women's rugby team over sort of a broader sport. Is there a more dominant team in English sport or in the UK sport anywhere on the global stage? I would say that there probably now are preeminent sporting team.
I mean, and almost more. And I think a more interesting question than that, because I'd almost love to be in Auckland at the moment, but obviously nobody's allowed in. But you know, to be there at the moment, and actually, what does... I mean, that wasn't just a beating. That was, you know, John Barkley's not with us anymore, but a great, that great Scottish word, a gubbing. That was an absolute thrashing that they took. And how... And we all know from a New Zealand rugby perspective that that is almost alien to their experience. 2 weeks in a row, I wonder actually what serious conversations are taking place there about the pecking order now, and whether I know it's been an experimental side that hasn't played much and what have you, but whether they're thinking, God, we've got real problems now.
Jonesy, how much can you give the Black Ferns in that respect? As Inver said, they haven't played Test rugby for yonks, but they'd hardly played any rugby at home anyway. I mean, when England won in the first week, we all went, oh well, the Black Ferns haven't played for ages, we'll really see them properly again next week. Well, the following week the victory was even more comprehensive. So do you, obviously a year's a long time to the next World Cup, but is that an assessment of where the two teams are?
Possibly not, but I don't think there's any... I don't think that New Zealand have got... The Black Ferns have got 15 players to bring in for a start. But they did actually play. They played in the Farah Palmer Cup, which was a provincial thing. So as long as if they didn't play at all, they did have rugby. But they were cowed. And the thing is, the great players they did have, like Kendra Cox at scrum half, completely lost it. She was binned once and could easily have been red carded. And she completely lost it because she's not used to it. You know, Portia Woodman on the wing was an Olympic gold medalist, got the ball twice. So, as Owen said, are there any teams in any sport in Britain at the moment that are so far ahead of the rest of the field? Well, we'll find out what our Jess Hayden thought about it right now.
On Sunday, England beat New Zealand 56-15 in the second meeting of the two sides this autumn. Amy Cocaine, the England hooker, scored a hat-trick, and tries also came from Ellie Kuldun, Leanne Infant, Lark Davis and Abby Dow. England were also awarded a penalty try for a deliberate knock-on. For New Zealand, Portia Woodman scored two tries and Lydia Flula scored one to limit the damage. This is the second week in a row that England have broken the record for the biggest point difference against New Zealand. Poppy Cleal could not have asked for much more in her debut as England captain. Elsewhere this week, it was announced that Wales women would receive professional contracts for the first time as part of a £2 million annual investment from the Welsh Rugby Union. As Wales faced Japan on Sunday, Captain Siobhan Lillycrap wasted no time improving her worth by crossing the try line after just 2 minutes at the Cardiff Arms Park. Team GB sevens superstar Jasmine Joyce scored a further two tries before a late consolation effort from Japan's Seina Sato, but it was not enough to stop Wales winning their first game in 32 months. The final score was Wales women 23, Japan 5. On Friday, Ireland play USA women at 7:15 p.m, which you can watch on RTE Player. Wales play South Africa on Saturday. Kickoff is 12:15 p.m, and the game will be live on BBC Two Wales. On Sunday, England play Canada at 2:30 p.m, live on BBC Two, and Scotland face Japan at 4:10.
Let's just quickly move on to the Premiership now. Another great week, and indeed, as we said in the previous ruck, another week ruined by the fact that some great games, really, really disappointing, and they've got to do something about it.
And they've got to do something about having free-to-air publicity, because people don't know it's happening at the moment.
Can I say something here, Jonesy?
Yeah.
So I completely agree with you. It's such a shame that these games are being not being given the full reign and full blast of best players and best publicity because of the international season. You're completely right, and you talked about this on the ruck last week. It's terrible, but this time the clubs have got themselves to blame. I mean, they invited a 13th team in. They've added four extra weeks to the season. So we could... I mean, who are we sort of saying, oh, it's such a shame? It's their blinking fool. They've done this.
I agree.
There'll be 14 next year.
It is at least partly... Yeah,
there won't be any more weekends because it's the same thing. But sure, it's their decision. They should be slimming it down, making it stronger and better rather than flamming it out and making it bigger and...
Oh, okay. Okay, that's strong words there. No, I agree.
The thing is, now you're a chief sports writer, you can say that sort of thing.
Exactly. It's a new authority that you got. Incredible comeback by London Irish on Saturday against Saracens from way back and with only 14 men. Harlequins without, what's his name?
Tommy Allen.
Without Marcus Smith, also won.
Without Joe
AJ
Marchand.
McGinty. AJ McGinty was back for sale, probably back to their best. Newcastle, first win over Exeter at Sandy Park.
That's incredible.
God bless
that
them. They're going like a bomb.
Yep.
Just move on, finally, now to our God or Goddess of the Week.
It's tough, this one, isn't it?
You're not allowed to pick Slotty.
Can we have three Marcus Smiths?
There is one
stipulation.
Yes.
They've got to have played more than 10 seconds against, and this can't be against a rubbishy old team.
You need to get off that high horse. And, you know, I tell you something. On Saturday, I think, even allowing for the opposition and even allowing for the issues about Tonga and money, and which we haven't even started on and we won't go around again, but it's an issue. Even allowing for everything else, I think on Saturday, England discovered a player who will be an absolute rock of their team at the apex of English international rugby for the next 5 years, potentially, and beyond. And his name is?
Freddie Stewart.
Yep, absolutely. I think so.
Chief sports writer, I knew that, Jonesy.
Yeah. That's because that intuition you just had it, didn't you?
Yeah, well,
I just thought under a high ball, just everything about him said, I am England's fullback for the next few years, injuries permitting and everything else. I just think he was fantastic.
Okay, this is a slightly surprising one from Invis, but a good choice. Slotty.
I thought it was a great choice. Mine's just from being in the Principality Stadium, as we said, a great occasion. I found it quite moving, actually, watching Ellis Jenkins play as well as he did, because if you didn't know, he was injured in decades ago. He had great potential. He's a Welsh captain in the making, or he was before he got injured. Hasn't played for international rugby for over 2 years, and this was his comeback, and that was some comeback. I mean, he didn't feel his way back into that level. He was right on the top of it from the start. I thought that was amazing.
Very good. Mine would have been the fly half. I would have gone for Dan Biggar, whose unbelievable courage under pressure and his strength and his optimism and his refusal to bow down is just incredible. And the stick he gets from Welsh fans is absolutely ridiculous. But I'm going to go to the opposite sex. I'd go to Helena Rowland, who played in the centre for England, was optimistic, went for the break, put people through with the pass. And I just thought she was delightful. She's only a youngster from Loughborough Lightning, and I just thought she was excellent and really, really, really joyous. And I think, John, you and I can agree on that. There was some joyous rugby played, and she was at the hub of it.
Yeah. And are we getting to the end of this now, Jensie? Are we getting to the end of this? Because actually, if we are, the joy was actually what Marcus Smith brought to Twickenham on Saturday. That sense of wonder at a young person seizing the stage and saying, I'm in charge here. That was joyous.
I genuinely wondered why the hell that bloke was what he was doing out there. I really did. So I had a sense of wonder as well. Thank you, John Inverdale. Owen Slot, don't forget, not the rugby correspondent, but the chief sports writer from The Times. Presumably, and that's the Times of London as well.
Is that presumably more money, though, Slotty? Is that what it was?
Unbelievable. Do you not see the helicopter I arrived in? Yeah.
And also, John Inverdale, thank you very much. People of older people would remember your fantastic career. And all I can say is, seriously, you were sadly missed on the BBC, because you were as much a part of home nations rugby as any of the players. And I mean that sincerely. Thanks, everybody. Follow us next week. We'll be having more conversations about Marcus Smith. I'll be taking a holiday. And stick with it. It's been a great tournament so far this autumn.
The trouble is, it's not a tournament. You see, you've just, in that payoff, Jonesy, that's the problem. And that's why Marcus Smith has to start against South Africa. If it was a tournament, then we'd have a conversation about it. Because it's not a tournament, he has to start.
So thanks for listening
this week, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Results don't matter, so we'll ask the Twickenham groundsman to take the scoreboard down, because no one cares. Thank you.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.